This morning I want to start into a two-part series on child discipline training and education. And first of all, like I did in the last study, I want to just go over some reasons why this study is important. As we know, the family is the backbone of society. And if the family is destroyed, the rest of society will go shortly thereafter. And we've seen that happen in the last, in the last generation or two. It's very apparent. Our children are the future, right? I mean, if our children aren't trained up in the ways of the Lord, then it's not going to take but a generation. And if they're not trained up, they're not going to train their children up, and it can easily disappear quickly. You parents are responsible for the training and education of your children, whether you do it yourself or whether you delegate it to others. And I'll talk about that next time, about the different ideas about schooling, whether it's public, private, or homeschooling, or whatever. But you're responsible for it either way, whether you choose to directly do it yourself or to give the delegation of that responsibility to somebody else. But ultimately, the buck stops with you, and God's going to be questioning you about it if your parent or if your children are not getting educated the way they should. And you have a responsibility to God, to your children, and to society in general, I would go so far as to say, to discipline your children and to ensure that they grow up to be God-fearing, honest, hardworking, and responsible, moral people. So I don't think it takes a village to raise a family, like Hillary Clinton says, but still, I mean, we have a responsibility to mankind in general to train up our children the way they should go so they're not a menace to society and ourselves and everybody else. So I first want to get into child discipline, and before I get into education, really you have to have a well-behaved child. His behavior has to be controlled before you're going to be able to train him and educate him properly. And I've run into this at the tutoring center while I've worked there. You have a hard time teaching students much of anything if they can't sit still, if they can't concentrate, or if they're just outright defiant, telling you they're not going to do it or not going to be there. I mean, that's not going to work very well, and you're not going to have much of a chance of getting much quality education to your children if they're not first disciplined. So that's what I want to talk about this morning. So what I want to do is I want to do the old five W's, close to that anyway, the what, why, what, when, how, and where of child discipline. So first I want to cover why children need to be disciplined. And this should be pretty apparent to anybody that's been around for more than a day or two, that you can see what happens to children that aren't disciplined, and you can tell that that's why they need to be disciplined. But first of all, foolishness is bound in their hearts. That's the primary reason why children need to be disciplined. And if you look in Proverbs 22 and verse 15, we're all familiar with this text, I think. And it says, "Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him." It's bound. Notice it doesn't say that foolishness is found in the heart of a child. It is bound. It's in there, deep-seated, taken root, and it needs to be driven out. Not coaxed out, not loved out, or anything else. It needs to be driven out. Bound is made fast by a tie. Confined, fastened down, bandaged. And it also can be used figuratively. And that's, as we're not, foolishness isn't literally, you know, with a chain and lock in the heart, right? But it's figuratively bound by that same way. It's tied in there, confined and fastened down. And the heart is not going to let that foolishness go easily. It's going to take a good beating to get it out of there. Foolishness is the quality or condition of being foolish. Foolish is fool-like, wanting in sense or judgment. And a fool is one deficient in judgment or sense. One who acts or behaves stupidly, a silly person, a simpleton. In biblical use, applied to vicious and impious persons. The word has in modern English, and that's what this King James Bible is modern English. And people don't think of it as modern English, but old English you couldn't even read. You probably couldn't even pronounce the letters, let alone the words. This is modern English, and I don't remember what period after. I don't know if it was 1700s or what. Whatever comes after modern English. But anyway, modern English, I think, began in the 1500s? Early 1600s? Anyway, Shakespearean language is modern English. Anyway, back to the definition. The word has in modern English a much stronger sense than it had at an earlier period. It has now an implication of insulting contempt, which does not, in the same degree, belong to any of its synonyms or the derivative foolish. So in modern English, this term is nothing to take lightly. This means a, like it says, a simpleton, somebody who believes stupidly, a silly person. And silly, if you look the definition up, and I don't have it, but if you look it up, silly doesn't mean goofy and, you know, somebody that's fun to be around. Silly women laden with sins we read about in 1 Timothy that false teachers lead away. But anyway, a fool is, it's not a guy that tells jokes. It's not the guy, you know, just kind of the cute guy that everybody likes to be around. No, he's the moron that nobody wants to be around. He's the one that's a menace to society. Foolishness, as we saw in the proverb there, must be driven out. It's not going to leave naturally. People, there is a form of psychology out there today which says that we should, that no, there should never be any corporal punishment of children. And there's even wackos out there that have been out there for, I don't know, at least 40 years. I read about it in James Dobson's book, where they're trying to get the Bill of Rights for children, and to where parents could never restrain their children. They could never, they give them whatever they want, never tell them no about anything, let them do anything they want, which is a complete disaster. I can't even imagine somebody stupid enough to advocate such an idea. But there are people out there that think just let the natural goodness of your child fester and let it go, let it grow out, and he'll turn into a good person because, you know, we're all good people, right? We all have natural goodness in our heart. We just need to let it blossom a little bit. We just need a little bit of time. But the Bible teaches otherwise. It says it must be driven out. To drive is to force men or animals to move on before one or flee away from one by blows or intimidation, to urge or impel with violence. So when we're talking about driving, we're not talking about coaxing. We're talking about beating with violence. Remember what Jesus did to the money changers in the temple? He drove them out. Which means, and people will say, oh, he was just driving out the animals. No, no, he wasn't. He was driving out the men too, beating them out with a scourge of small cords. And I don't have a problem in the world with that. I mean, if J.P. Morgan or Goldman Sachs came to church today, I'd probably be doing the same thing, getting them out of the house of God. So anyway, a child, so here's the proof of what I just said, that it's not going to leave naturally. A child left to himself brings his mother to shame. Not to honor, but to shame. Proverbs 29 and verse 15. The Word of God is way smarter than any of these modern people think they are. They've developed all these crazy theories and they think they're so wise. And the old Word of God that's been around for thousands of years is perfectly in tune with the human condition the human condition. I'll leave it at that. Proverbs 29:15 says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." So you want to make your kids smart? Give them a good beating once in a while when they need it. You'll make them smart. It gives wisdom. But you leave them to themselves, and they will bring their mother to shame and their father. And I got lots of verses for that here in, maybe in another 15 minutes or so. But yeah, it's not going to leave on their own. If you took a child, and I would never recommend actually doing this experiment, but you can imagine if you just took a child and just literally left him do whatever he wanted and didn't restrain any inclination, any instinct, anything that he had, he'd be a monster. He'd be an absolute monster. He would literally turn into an animal. You would not want to do that. The nature of man would not turn out well if left to grow on its own. The goal is to train them up in the way that they should go with the hope that when they grow old, they will not depart from it. And that's the hope, and I've mentioned this before. When they are old, they may depart from it for a while. You may have a prodigal son. They may go, you know, and lots of them have, go off and spend all their money on riotous living like he did, and then come crawling back on their hands and knees after things didn't go so well. But the goal is that you train them up right, the way they should when they're young, and when they're old, they won't depart from it. Let's get to the verse. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And I should add in there as a disclaimer, too, that the book of Proverbs by definition are short, pithy sayings that are general observations that generally hold true in the world, right? This is not a thus saith the Lord, this will happen without fail every single time. You train them up in the way they should go, they will not depart from it. That is not a guarantee, and I can give you examples of that. There's another proverb that says that when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh his enemies to be at peace with him. Did Jesus Christ, and I've used this before, did Jesus Christ's ways please the Lord? Of course it did. Did it make his enemies to be at peace with him? Well, they crucified him, so I wouldn't exactly call that peaceful. So, no, I mean, these are general observations that normally hold true under, you know, normal conditions, but not always. God has rebellious children. God certainly knows how to train them up in the way they should go, and God's own children rebel and go and die in the wilderness and wander around for 40 years. So it's not a guarantee, but if you're a betting man, you bet on training them up in the way they should go, and when they're old, they won't depart from it. Now, the foolishness in the hearts of the children comes from their sinful nature. In Ephesians 2 and verse 3, like we were talking about, like Bud said at the Bible study on Wednesday, it all goes back to Genesis. Everything in the scripture and our whole, all the problems we have in this world all go back to the first chapter, or to the third chapter of Genesis. In Ephesians 2, verse 3, we see that this is the nature of man. It is the nature of children to have this foolishness in their hearts. They don't learn it. They don't need to learn it. You ever have to teach your kids how to lie? Nobody has to teach them how to lie. You got to teach them how to tell the truth. You have to teach them how to disobey? No. They do that naturally. You have to teach them to obey. So anyway, you have to teach them to be selfish? No. You got to teach them to be generous. You got to teach them to share. Ephesians 2 and verse 3. Among whom also we all had our conversation in times past, in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. Fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature. It's in our very nature. That is what it is to be a human being, is to be a child of wrath. That's just how it is. There were only two people that were ever made that didn't have that nature. The first and the second Adam. Adam and Jesus Christ. They didn't have that nature. But every single one of us do. This sinful nature, which is dead in trespasses and in sins, was passed to them from Adam. And we're all familiar with this, but for the sake of repetition, I'll do it again. Maybe somebody didn't hear it the first 100 times or so. Romans 5 and verse 12. Wherefore is by one man, that's Adam, wherefore is by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. So that death passed unto all men. Every one of Adam's progeny, every one of his descendants, inherited that sinful nature which is dead in trespasses and in sins. And so complete is this sinful nature, and so early is it, that it's even said in the Bible that it's found in us in youth. You go back to Genesis 8 and verse 21. Some people think babies don't have sin, but I'll show you otherwise. Genesis 8 and verse 21. If you start about, maybe halfway down the verse, God says, I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Evil from his youth. So that takes you back to a younger child, maybe the age of James or Chris or something like that. So you guys, the imagination of your heart is evil. But I'll get down to get down to David, and then I even get down younger than that. Look in Psalm 58 and verse 3. Flattering sermon for the kids, I know. Psalm 58 and verse 3. The wicked are estranged from the womb as soon as they go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. So that little precious, beautiful newborn baby goes astray right from the womb, speaking lies. It takes him no time at all to start sinning and to start exalting his will against his parents. And if you look back a few chapters in Psalm 51 and verse 5, it even starts before they breach the matrix. It starts the whole way at conception. Psalm 51 and verse 5, David said, Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. The whole way back at conception. So I do believe, as some do, in the age of accountability, it's zero. That's the age of accountability. Now, not only is it good for a child to discipline, we're going back to this, why would we discipline a child? Not only is it good for the child to discipline him, it's good for you parents, too. It'll give you a lot of peace and rest. I mean, if you're just selfish people and you only care about yourself, discipline your children anyway, it'll still be better for you. And I know you all love your kids. But even if you didn't, discipline them anyway. It'll make it make your life easier. Children should not be your oppressors. If you look at Isaiah 3 and verse 12, this is God's censuring of Israel for allowing children and women to run their society. Children were oppressing them. These little kids, and I've seen it, and you've all seen it. Go to the grocery store sometime. Little kids oppressing their parents. It's ridiculous. I mean, you would think that the parent was some kind of a midget and they had a 6-foot-tall kid and they just couldn't restrain him. It's ridiculous. Of course they can. They won't. Isaiah 3 and verse 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths. So this unruly children thing goes way back. I mean, this was happening way back in Israel, and they knew better. They had the same verses, most of the same verses that I'm going to be reading to you this morning. Now, if they are not disciplined, it's going to harm them and you if they're unruly. Now, if you correct your children, they'll give you rest, and that's what I was getting at a minute ago. In Proverbs 29 and verse 17, we're going to be spending a lot of time in Proverbs this morning. There's a lot of good wisdom in this book, and I've recommended this to people before. If you only have time to read one chapter a day of your Bible, I would probably, at least some days, I would recommend reading a chapter of the book of Proverbs. And the nice thing about it is there's 31 chapters in Proverbs, and there's 31 days in about half the months. So just pick the day of the month, which is the 27th today, and read, like I did this morning, Proverbs chapter 27. And that way, you will read through every proverb 12 times per year, and by the time you get to Bud's age, you'll have read the thing probably at least a million times, and you'll know it like the back of your hand. I've been doing this seriously. I've been doing this for years. I think since 2005 when I was in Iraq, I started doing this, a proverb, according to the date, every day. And you'd be amazed at how much you'd learn, too. They have Bible quizzes online. You can take a quiz on the Proverbs, 200 and some questions on there, and it's broken down into different, family stuff or money stuff or whatever, wisdom, that kind of thing. And they may give you 10 questions on each one, and they'll give you half the proverb and then give you, 4 choices for the second half of the proverb. You'd be amazed at how much if you're just prodded with part of it, how much you can remember. It's fascinating. It really is. I couldn't believe it, how much information you can retain. Anyway, yeah, correct your children and they give you rest. Proverbs 29 and verse 17. It says, correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. You're going to have a peaceful existence with your kids if you correct them, and correct them early. They'll give you rest. Otherwise, you're going to be running around pulling your hair out at your wit's end and just saying, I can't do anything with them. I can't control them. Now, if you correct your children, they'll bring you much happiness. And I got a few verses here. I'm just going to rattle off. I've printed them out, so I don't have to turn to them all. But it says in Proverbs 10:1 and Proverbs 15:20, a wise son maketh a glad father. You want to be happy? Well, make your son wise by correcting him. It says in Proverbs 23 and verse 15, my son, if thine heart be wise, my heart shall rejoice, even mine. So you rejoice if you have a wise son. But he's not going to be that way on his own. You've got to train him up. Now, on the other hand, if you don't correct your children, they will bring you much pain and sorrow. Listen to these verses. I got a whole bunch of them, about 6 of them. Proverbs 10 and verse 1, a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Proverbs 15:20, a foolish man despiseth his mother. Proverbs 17:25, a foolish son is the grief of his father and bitterness to her that bare him. Don't wish that you never bore your children. Don't be so bitter against them. A foolish son is the calamity of his father. Proverbs 19 and verse 13. Proverbs 19:26, he that wasteth his father and chaseth away his mother is a son that causeth shame and bringeth reproach. And Proverbs 28 and verse 7, whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of riotous men shameth his father. That's what can happen if you don't train up your children and you don't restrain them. They'll bring you heaviness, grief, bitterness, calamity, shame, and reproach. So, I mean, the stakes are high. You don't want to mess up. So we covered the why. Why do you discipline your children? Because there's foolishness bound in their heart and you got to drive it out of there. What type of behaviors merit discipline? That's what I want to look at next. Well, number one, and there'll be several of them, and the last point that I made kind of just sums them all up, and if I forgot any, it's all lumped into there, so you can't accuse me of not preaching unto you all the counsel of God, because I kind of just lumped it in there in three words. But anyway, rebellion would be a major one. Rebellion must be met with the rod. Rebellion is open or determined defiance of or resistance to any authority or controlling power. So when you have a child openly defy you, you say do this and they say no, you better be getting that rod out immediately. That deserves severe punishment. Rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and it must be punished sternly. You wouldn't want your children to be witches, would you? You wouldn't allow them to be practicing witchcraft, but you ought not to be allowing them to rebel either. Funny, though, here on next Thursday, lots of parents will not only allow but encourage their children to do witchcraft, and they'll dress them up like little witches and go around and try to scare people and sucker candy out of them. Anyway, First Samuel 15 and verse 23. 1 Samuel 15 and verse 23. This is when King Saul was supposed to destroy all the Amalekites and all the oxen, camels, and asses, and women, children, sucklings, everybody. And he saved the best of the animals to do sacrifice unto the Lord, and God was not so pleased. God said that was rebellion. And Samuel here condemned Saul, and he said in 1 Samuel 15, 23, "For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king." So rebellion and stubbornness go together. You got a stubborn child, you need to have a stronger will than he or she does, and you need to break them of that. And I've got a niece that is pretty stubborn, and I've seen stubborn children, and they'll try your patience, but you have to be stronger than them. You have to break them, and you have to not allow them to get their way. Because if you just throw up your hands and give in, you're never, I mean, they're always going to walk all over you. You have to be more tenacious than they do. And that can be challenging. It's easy for me to say, I don't have kids. I'm just telling you guys what to do. But that would not be easy, no doubt. Disobedience to parents, grandparents, and teachers is another thing that should merit the rod. I would say definitely disobedience to parents, but even to grandparents or authority figures. I mean, I've spanked my nieces, I think all three of them before, and my brother and sister-in-law encourage it. I mean, they're happy with it. They always tell me, you don't be good, Uncle Chad's going to give you a spanking, you know. And so, I don't have a problem with it at all. And, I mean, I wouldn't babysit those kids if I wasn't allowed to spank them. I mean, if they needed it, you go get another babysitter. I'm not going to do that. And if I had kids, I would tell my parents, the grandparents, you better discipline them. They come back to me like a bunch of hellions after they've been with you. They're not going to be with you long. You better discipline them. You better spank them when they need it. And same with their teachers. You can't do this anymore. Back in the day, though, I'd send them a little permission slip to school. Please beat me when needed. You know, and give it to them and tell the teachers to do it. Absolutely. And then when they get home, send me a note. When they get home, they'll get it again. But anyway, this... Children must obey their parents, and we looked at this, I think we looked at this just recently. Ephesians 6 and verse 1. Ephesians 6 and verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And parallel text to that in Colossians 3 and verse 20, it says, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Disobedience must be punished. You don't need to say something more than once. And this is a major problem. And with people today, you see it all the time. I mean, it's just tell them over and over and over again. You really don't need to say it more than once. If disobedience is not met with the rod on the first offense, it should definitely be met on the second. So maybe you cut them some slack. You say, do this, and they meander around. They don't do it. Or they say, oh, I don't want to. Okay, maybe cut them some slack. You tell them a second time. Don't tell them a third time. Just head right for the rod and... Like my grandfather said, those that don't listen have to feel. I would not tell them three times. Absolutely not. You should never have to repeat yourself more than once. And even that's too much most of the time. Don't fall into this foolish counting stuff that I've seen so many parents do. I've never seen anybody, you know, heard about it, believe me, if I saw anybody do it in this church. But this nonsense, I'm sure you've seen it. Hopefully you haven't done it. If you have, repent. But this, you know, Johnny, do this. Johnny, one, two, three. And usually, I don't think these people have made it past a first grade education because they can't count to three. They can only go to two and then start over again. Johnny, one, two, Johnny, one, two, you know, over. They never get, because three, the spanking is supposedly going to come, you know. It never comes. You know, it's they just keep repeating one and two over and over again. So don't ever fall into that, and then don't do that around me, because you'll get an earful about that one. All this does is teach Johnny that he can disobey you for at least 2.5 seconds before he has to do it. And kids aren't stupid. They're smarter than you are, and they figure it out real quick. If they know they're going to get three warnings before they have to do something, guess what? They're never going to do anything until the third warning or the second warning or whatever. They will figure you out very quickly. Backtalk and disrespect is another one. And I think I will mention later on different forms of punishment. But sometimes it's good to tailor the punishment to the crime. So they backtalk, flip them in the lip or something like that, you know. Something that, or you know, they lie to you. I'm kind of stealing my thunder, but they lie to you, wash their mouth out with soap or something like that to associate something. I did something with my mouth. Now my mouth is feeling pain or something like that. I'm not saying you punch them with a closed fist or anything like that. But, you know, something where you're not going to injure the child, but it's going to inflict some kind of pain, and they're going to understand. Lying is another one. Laziness, that's another one. Don't permit laziness in your children. When it comes to academic work or when it comes to just doing chores or work around the house or whatever, don't. And that's a tough one. I mean, with academic work especially, every kid's different, and what may be considered lazy in one is just boredom in another, or something. Maybe he's not challenged enough or something. And you want to be careful with that, because if you do start beating your children every time they're not doing as much homework as they should, then they'll start to resent the idea of studying and learning. And so, I don't know, you got to figure that on your own. But I wouldn't permit laziness when you know it's laziness. And, you know, just do a little trial and error on that one. Proverbs 10 and verse 5, though. We got some Proverbs that don't speak highly of lazy people. Proverbs 10 and verse 5. Says, he that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame. It's funny, that Onion News Network, they put out a report, you know, quote unquote, the other day, where they were talking about, I think I told somebody about it, the chipmunk, and they were reporting on how the chipmunk goes out and he prepares for himself in the wintertime, and he collects acorns and nuts and does all this extra work and lays up in store for himself and manages to provide enough for him to eat and sustain himself while he's preparing for the future. And they're interviewing all these people, and the people are like, you know that little chipmunk? I mean, he just knows what he wants. You know, he goes out there, he's got his goal set, he's going to do it. It's just amazing. I mean, he goes out there and he works so hard, and they're just going on and on. And of course, the whole thing's just a joke and making fun of lazy Americans, basically. But anyway, you know, if animals have enough sense to go prepare for the future, then so ought we, I would say. You know, don't be sleeping in the time of harvest. In Proverbs 29 and verse 15, says, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. So kind of the same thing I was saying there before. There's a proverb, and if I can't find it in about 2 seconds, then I'm not going to bother. Oh yeah, here we go. Proverbs 20 and verse 4 says, the sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg in harvest and have nothing. And I'll tell you what, the Word of God can save you. Because I remember one time, just a little comic relief to, I don't know if it'll be funny or not, but anyway, I had this old Escort, and I was driving through, I drove through this blizzard to get back home, and it was only hitting on like 2 cylinders or something like that, just barely running. It was this terrible snowstorm, it was freezing cold when I got home, and I just really, I'm just like, whatever, it was an old car anyway, and I'm just like, I'm just not even going to touch it, I don't even care, I'm just going to drive it, if it blows up, it blows up. And I kid you not, this proverb popped into my mind, the sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing. Because it was cold, I didn't want to go out. So I went outside in a snowstorm, I popped the hood open, and I looked, and all it was a spark plug wire had come off one of the little bracket there, and it was laying on the exhaust manifold, melted through it, and of course it was shorting out to the exhaust manifold, and that's why it was missing. So I, you know, put the wire back up on the thing, and it ran fine. If I'd kept driving it like that, it would have blown up. So anyway, the Word of God can save you. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So You know, don't be stupid, and not plow whenever it's cold out. Hanging out with friends who are fools. There's another thing that needs to be punished in children. Proverbs 28 and verse 7. This is very dangerous. Proverbs 28 and verse 7 says, "Whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of riotous men shameth his father." So if your kids end up being companions of riotous men, they're going to bring you to shame. You want to watch out. You better know who your kids' friends are. You don't want to just be assuming, oh, I've taught them well. They'll pick good friends. Know who they are. Bring their friends over for dinner some night. Get to know them, especially if you're going to let them go to their house or you're going to let them go out with them and spend time with them, whenever they get old enough to drive and that kind of thing. Believe me, I know, you probably know. I know what I did with my friends. And don't be dumb enough, for goodness sakes, don't be dumb enough to let your kids say, oh, I'm staying at my friend's house. Oh, okay, and don't bother to check. And then, of course, their friend is staying at his friend's house, too, and both of them are out running around all night or what. Nobody's staying at anybody's house or somebody's house where you definitely wouldn't want them. So don't be stupid. You know, your kids are smarter than you are, and they'll, don't just assume that they're just going to be good boys and girls because they might not be. I guess sometimes it's good to have a preacher that was a real reprobate when he was younger, because now I kind of know all this stuff and I can tip you off on it. Proverbs 13 and verse 20. Proverbs 13 and verse 20. It says, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed." Kids, you want to pick smart friends, wise friends. Because if you have wise friends, it says in Proverbs, "As iron sharpeneth iron, so doth a man sharpen the countenance of his friend." So you have wise friends, they'll help you. You will sharpen each other. You have foolish friends, you'll be destroyed. A companion of fools will be destroyed. And don't think that you can hang out with bad friends and think that they're going to have no bad effect. I mean, I know that's a very complicated word. I keep using bad, but I can't think of anything more less bad than that. So anyway, in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, don't think that they're not going to rub off on you. You know, you hanging out with poor friends and your goodness rubbing off on them would be about as stupid as you jumping in a mud puddle and hoping to clean it up because you're nice and clean. It's not going to happen. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 33 says, "Be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners." They will corrupt you. So watch out. I know what I'm talking about. I had friends that corrupted me. I probably corrupted them too, but in all honesty, they definitely corrupted me. I was raised in a Christian home, and I had friends that weren't, and I did a lot of things that I'm sure that I would not have done had I not been with them and had the opportunity and the encouragement and everything else. And lastly, just sin in general, and that's why I just, kind of carte blanche. That just covers it all. Whenever your children sin, maybe not every transgression deserves a rod, but, leave it up to your discretion. But that is the type of behavior that should be punished. So we've covered the why and the what. Let's look at the when. When should children be disciplined? And I'm talking here at what age? I'll talk about when as far as in relation to the transgression here in a minute. But at what age should they start to be disciplined? Well, Proverbs 13 and verse 24 says, "He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." That betimes is an old word, and it means at an early time, period, or season, early in the year, early in life. So if you love your children, you chasten them early in life. And I'll get into how early that should be in just a second. To chasten is to inflict disciplinary or corrective punishment on, to visit with affliction, or the purpose of moral improvement, to correct, discipline, chastise. So you love your children? Do that early. Chasten them and chastise them early, at an early age. You can't let them go too long or it's too late. And I'll get into that in just a second. You see there, it's the parent that loves his child that chastens him early. A lot of parents say, I love my kids too much to spank them. I couldn't possibly lay my hand on them. I love them too much. No, God's word says you don't love them. You hate them. You don't do that, you hate your children. God sets us the pattern here for chastening children. Look in Hebrews 12. So anybody that says it's wrong to chasten children are telling God that he's wrong, because that's what God does to his kids. In Proverbs, in Hebrews 12, 5 through 8. Hebrews 12, 5 through 8. It says, "And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked at him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth." When God chastens his children, it's because he loves them. Kids, when your parents chasten you, it's because they love you. It may not feel that way, and it doesn't feel that way when God's doing it, but if you're smart, you'll kiss the rod. You'll thank your parents for giving you a good beating when you needed it, and you'll thank God likewise for it. Verse 7, "If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons." See, if God doesn't chasten you, you know what he's saying? They're not my kids. I don't care about them. I don't go out there and beat random strangers' children. I feel like it sometimes, but I'm like, they're not my kids. I'm not going to do that. So if God doesn't chasten you, that's because he's saying, you're a bastard. You're not my son. I didn't adopt you. You're not mine. So unless you want to treat your children like they're not your own, you better chasten them. And kids, you better thank him for it. You know, next time, kids, next time, Caleb, when you get a spanking next time, say, "Thank you, may I have another?" That's what you do. He says, "That's just crazy." All right. Good fathers will follow God's lead. Let's read the rest, the next two verses. Hebrews 12 and verse 11 through 9. "Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence." He's talking about people like you and I, you know, men. "Shall we not rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous." Kids, does it feel good? Chastening feel good? No, it doesn't, does it? It's grievous, isn't it? It should be. "Nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them that are exercised thereby." I don't think kids get enough exercise these days. They're walking around, they're obese, they need more exercise. And this is a good start. This is good exercise. Exercise them with the rod. That will help them out a lot. And notice, "it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto those that are exercised thereby." You notice when you get madness in the house and the kids are talking back or this or that, or you've been out all day and they've just been off, when you come home and give them a good licking, and all of a sudden there's peace and quietness. And the kids like that. I mean, it doesn't feel good at the time, but they like to be in an environment which is controlled, and they're not out of control, and they know where the limits are, and they know where the boundaries are. They like that. They like there's security in that. They like it. Or they should, anyway. "You only have a short period of time to do this while there is hope." Look at Proverbs 19 and verse 11. Don't start at 17 and think you're going to, you know, chasing your son and get him back on the straight and narrow. It's way too late. Don't even start at 7. Don't even start at 5. I mean, you've waited way too long at that point. Proverbs 19 and verse 18. "Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying." Chasten him while there's hope. That tells me that after a certain point, there's not hope. You're going to be without hope if you wait too long. I'll get into that second part later. That'll be in the next part of this study. Once a person gets to be a full-grown fool, it's too late. Proverbs 27 and verse 22. Proverbs 27 and verse 22. "Though thou shouldest bray a fool in a mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will not his foolishness depart from him." You know what a mortar and a pestle is? Eddie knows what it is. Pharmacists back in the day used to, mortar's a bowl. Eddie's a drug dealer, in case you didn't know. Mortar's a bowl. Pestle's a little, you know, little rod thing or whatever. And you put stuff in there and you crush it up into a powder. That's how pharmacists used to make medicine. So anyway, just get the image here. "Though thou shouldest bray," which bray, I have the definition where Where's my notes at? Next page. Yeah, I do have the definition. Good. Bray means to beat small, bruise, pound, crush to powder, usually in a mortar. Though thou shouldest crush and pound it into powder. You take a fool, you put him in a mortar, so to speak, and crush him to powder. His foolishness will not depart from him. It is part and parcel of his being. It's not going to work. And you've seen stupid people like this, in and out of jail. I mean, just problems constantly. It doesn't matter what you do to them. You cannot get the foolishness out of them. So don't let the kids get into full-grown fools where there's no hope. 100 stripes to such a fellow would do what a few good ones will do to a young child. A few good ones to a young child will get him on the straight and narrow for the rest of his life. 100 stripes into a fool won't help him a bit. Proverbs 17 and verse 10. A reproof entereth more into a wise man than 100 stripes into a fool. You got a guy that's wise, all you have to do is tell him that he's doing the wrong thing, and he'll automatically change. Oh, thank you for that. You got a fool, you could literally beat the guy 100 times, and he's not going to change. And we've all seen people like that. It's terrible. So at what age is early in life? Because that was the definition of betimes. How early is early? Well, here's what you got to figure out. It's not an exact age, but here's the magic potion, or the magic whatever. As soon as a child starts trying to exert his will over his parents' will is when chastening must begin. So if he's 6 months old or whatever, whenever he starts to exert his will, and they will, even before they can talk, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but yeah, as early as 6 months, they'll start exerting their will, and they'll start telling you that they don't like how you're doing things, they don't like your rules, and they're going to scream, and just to let you know that they don't like it, and they want to do what they want to do, and that's about the time when the rod needs to come out, or some form of corporal punishment anyway, at that point. And I know people, I mean, please visit me in prison if these sermons ever get heard by the wrong person talking about spanking six-month-old babies, but that's the truth. This can happen, like I said, long before he's old enough to speak his opposition to your rules. He doesn't need to say it. You don't need to wait until he's 2 or 3 years old. You know, you've waited way too long if you've waited that long. When should a child be chastened in relationship to the time of the offense? So, all right, so he breaks the rules. When do I do it? Do I wait? You know, I'm busy right now. I just chastened that box elder bug that was about ready to fly into my face. So, anyway, what was I saying? You didn't see that, did you? You just thought I was... Oh, okay. Yeah, it was a good...
He's coming back.
That was a good aim, wasn't it?
It was very
good. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just getting practiced up, you know? I'm getting ready to... So, anyway... Yeah, so when should they be chastened? Should you wait until, there he is again, should you wait until, you know, you get home or whatever, or should you wait until you put the rest of the kids to sleep or whatever? No, I would say definitely not. The parents should correct their children as quickly as possible after the need for correction arises. So when it's possible, I mean, if you're in the middle of, if you're at the dentist office, I wouldn't recommend, you know, just start breaking out the rod or something like that, and I'll get into that in just a second. But especially when you're at home, do it immediately. I mean, don't wait. Especially the younger they are, they're not going to remember 2 minutes from now when you're giving them a spanking that what they even did. You know, let them know immediately. You know, when a dog craps on the floor, as a crude example, rub his nose in it immediately. You know, don't go out tomorrow and beat the tar out of him. He's not going to remember crapping on the floor. He's not going to associate the punishment with the transgression. So do it as quickly as you can. In other words, you know, when the child has done something improper, that's when correction should be given, and it should be done quickly. This helps the child, as I said, to associate the improper behavior with the pain of correction resulting eventually in the corrected behavior. And those of you with kids, you know that it's not just going to happen in one spanking. I mean, it's going to take a few times, several times, maybe who knows, maybe a million of them. With some kids, they don't ever seem to learn, but you just got to keep doing it. And just, you know, be not weary in well-doing, for we shall reap if we faint not. So... You know, if at first you don't succeed, try again. You know, just man falleth 7 times and riseth up again. So just keep trying. Putting off disciplining the child until you're at your wit's end could result in you losing your temper and hurting the child. So that's what you don't want to do. You don't want to wait and just say, oh, I don't feel like it now. You know, I'm busy right now. And he keeps acting up. To the point where you just can't take it anymore. Come here, you little, you know, and you end up really hurting the child. I mean, you definitely don't want to do that. And if you are in a rage like that, I would recommend just cooling off for a while. I'm not saying you can't be angry when you're spanking your kids, but cool off for a while and just make sure, though you might be angry, make sure you are in control and you're calculating it. You know what you're doing. I'm going to give him this many spanks, and you know, don't ever let yourself lose control and end up hurting your child. You don't want to do that. Now, if you're in a public place where it would not be wise to discipline your child, then tell them when they get home, you're going to get it. You're going to get it. Mark my words. And when they get home, you make sure you give it to them. And it doesn't matter if the rest of the day they're the sweetest little angel and you have the best time, because they know this stuff. I remember when you get home, you're going to get a spanking. I was the best kid ever then and having a great time with my parents, and they probably forgot about it most of the time. Don't forget about it. It doesn't matter if you had the best day ever. Go home and give them the spanking and tell them why. And that way, the next time when you're out and you say, you better behave yourself, they're going to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to get a spanking when I get home. They'll remember. They're not going to forget that stuff. But on the other hand, if it's, oh, you wait till I get home, you wait till we get home, and it never comes, then they're going to remember. When I'm in public, free reign, do whatever I want, dad, mom, nobody's going to do a thing. I know of some Christians, I don't know them personally, somebody told me, though, that they were with a couple, and they were traveling down the road in the van, and one of the kids was acting up. The woman just took off of her seatbelt, climbed back there, whack, 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 went about up. She wasn't driving, obviously. Somebody else was driving. That would have been quite a feat, you know, tie the steering wheel off or something. But anyway, you know, she didn't waste any time. Just got right back in there and took care of business. So we covered the why and the when. Let's look at the how. How should children be disciplined? Well, the primary method of correction should be beating with a rod. Proverbs 13 and verse 24. And I'm using Bible terms because God uses Bible terms. And if you don't like it, go pound sand. That's what I have to say about that. Proverbs 13 and verse 24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. He that spareth his rod is what I want to get at. The rod should be used. Proverbs 22 and verse 15. Proverbs 22 and verse 15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Proverbs 23, 13 through 14, withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, thou shalt and shalt deliver his soul from hell. I've got more to say about that later. And Proverbs 29 and verse 15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. So we clearly see there it's a rod. Every place that I can think of, at least in the book of Proverbs, is a rod when it talks about giving correction to the children. Gideon used thorns and briars. That might be a little excessive. I don't know. I mean, those were full-grown fools, and they deserved that. But I wouldn't recommend, you know, going outside and getting briars or, you know, a thorn bush or something like that and chastening your children with them. Don't be scared of this word beat. It means little different than spanking. Now, I realize that we should be wise and prudent, and we don't need, you know, a fool on earth all his mind. We don't need to be stupid and going out in public and saying, you know, that I beat my child with a rod or something like that. And maybe even when you're at home, if you want to use the term spank, I understand, because your kids will go to school and say, oh, my dad beats me. You know, and then you're going to go to prison because beating has a negative connotation to it when it doesn't mean anything different than spanking, really. But anyway, so I mean, I'll leave that up to your discretion. Be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And, you know, I'm not saying that you, but don't despise the word of God for using those words anyway. And I would recommend using a rod because the Bible says to use it or something similar to it. So the word beat means to strike with repeated blows. To strike is to deal a blow, to smite with the hand, occasionally another limb, a weapon or tool, to deal a person or animal a blow or hit with some force, either with the hand or with a weapon. To spank is to slap or smack a person, especially a child, with the open hand. To slap is to strike or smack a person or thing smartly, especially with the open hand or with something having a flat surface. To hit one upon or over a certain part in this way. And smack is to strike a person, part of the body, etc., with the open hand or with something having a flat surface. To slap, also specifically to chastise a child in the manner and figure. So anyway, all those definitions, you see that to beat means to strike, to spank means to slap and smack means to strike. So the difference would be spank generally means with the open hand, to beat can be with something else, you know, some kind of another instrument of punishment. So anyway, but they're not that differently. I mean, to say I give my child a beating or a spanking really isn't all that different. Now, a rod should be the primary instrument of punishment, Proverbs 22 and verse 15. Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. And we already saw this one too. But Proverbs 23:13 and 14 is another one, and the other ones that we read earlier. I'm not going to read them again. Now, a rod, and we're not talking about like a rebar here or anything, so don't get carried away. A rod is a straight, slender shoot or wand growing out or growing upon or cut out from a tree, bush, etc. This is what the old timers called a switch. I'm sure your parents ever said, I'm going to go cut a switch. You know, that's what it is, just a little branch off of a tree, basically, you know, with no other limbs on it, just a tiny little thing that's kind of, you know, flexible or whatever, and it hurts. You know, it's not something that's an inch thick, you know, where you're going to, you know, bruise somebody or hurt somebody with it, but it's just something that's going to, it's going to hurt, but it's not going to hurt for very long, and it gets the job done. I mean, it works really well. A wand is a straight, slender stick. In Scottish use, chiefly a slender, pliant stick cut from a stem or branch of a shrub or young tree. Now, when a child gets a beating, it should consist of more than one strike with a rod. If you saw the definition, to beat means to strike repeatedly. Yes, to strike with repeated blows. So when a child gets a beating, it should be more than one whack. And I know, I mean, I know people personally that, you know, give spankings to their children, which they have diapers on, and they're hitting them with their open hand. Like, I guarantee, I mean, they don't feel anything. They just cry because, you know, whatever, dad's mad or whatever, and but they don't feel anything, I guarantee it. And they wonder why, the spankings don't seem to be doing any good. I wonder why. They don't inflict any pain, that's the problem. Pain is a good teacher. So anyway, it should consist of more than one strike. It should hurt. The beating should cause some tears. And I realize, like I said, come visit me in prison whenever the wrong person hears this. Proverbs 19 and verse 18. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. Don't let your son spare for his crying. So that tells me that a good beating should cause tears. And when tears come, don't stop. Whenever you've determined how many they need, don't stop. Crying means the action of a verb, or the action of the verb cry in its various senses, shouting, lamentation, weeping. So, you know, a lot of that stuff happens when you give a child a spanking. There's crying, lamentation, weeping, and yelling and everything else. I mean, that's what happens. And, you know, don't feel bad about that. I'm sure it's not the most pleasant situation. And maybe parents cry after they get done spanking their kids because they don't like to do it. But nevertheless, that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. Correction should be grievous. Remember we read in Hebrews 12 and verse 11, said that no chastening for the present time seems to be joyous, but grievous, it should be grievous. And if you look in Proverbs 15 and verse 10, it tells us as much. Proverbs 15 and verse 10 says, correction is grievous unto him that forsaketh the way, and he that hateth reproof shall die. So yeah, correction is grievous. It hurts. And it should. Determine beforehand how many whacks the infraction merits, and don't stop until you've given that many, regardless of the yelling or the crying from the child. So if whatever was done, and you determine in your mind, you know what, that deserves 5 whacks, or whatever it was, he lied to me, it deserves 5, or whatever, then go in there and give him 5. And if after 2 they start wailing and crying and everything else, don't stop. Don't stop until you've given him 5, or whatever. If it needs more than that, fine. But, just you have to be resolved in what you're going to do, and don't go in there thinking that they deserve this many, but then you just get soft and you feel bad for them and you don't give them what they deserve. Proverbs 19:18, I think I just read that one. Yeah, let not thy soul spare for his crying. Now the rod, now here's one that will really get me in trouble. The rod may leave bruises, which are a sign that foolishness has been driven out. Proverbs 20 and verse 30. The blueness of a wound cleanseth away evil, so do stripes the inward parts of the belly. So stripes, which are spanking, beatings, cleanse away evil. And the blueness of the wound, that's, you know, you've seen a bruise that's blue, you know, so do it on the butt so nobody sees it, you know. Anyway, I'm not saying, you know, I'm honestly, I don't have very much practical experience with this, so I don't know how much leaves a bruise and how hard a spanking has to be and all that stuff. And so, whatever, just give them a spanking that's good enough to get the job done, and whatever happens, happens. I don't know, I'll let you figure all that stuff out. Though it should be painful, the beating should not be excessive, and it should not cause long-lasting pain to a child. I mean, there should be no broken limbs. You know, there should be no, nothing like that. I'm being ridiculous even saying something like that. But it shouldn't be something where the poor kid can't sit down for the next, you know, week or something like that. It should hurt, but the pain should go away, and I don't know, however long it should take. But anyway, it shouldn't be long-lasting, but it should be enough that they can definitely associate the pain with the infraction. Now, the beating with a rod will not kill the child. Believe me, it's not going to kill him. I'll give you a verse for that in case you don't agree. Proverbs 23 and verse 13 says, withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell. Now, rather, it will save him from a more severe punishment. I should have waited for verse 14. It'll save him from a more severe punishment later in life. It's going to save his soul from hell. Not spiritually speaking, I mean, it's not going to turn him into a child of God if he's a reprobate or something like that, obviously, but it'll save him from a lot of hell in this life. How many of us have been through hell in this life? Huh? Yeah? It'll save you from a lot of hell. So, you know, this is what you call beating the hell out of your kids, and I wholeheartedly endorse it. It's a good idea. Beat the hell out of them. Get the hell out of them so that they don't turn out to be hellions when they grow up. Once the punishment has been given, then you should affirm your love to them. This should be done so that they understand that you punish them because you love them. So you don't give them a spanking and then tell them that you hate them, or give them a spanking and tell them how miserable of a child they are or whatever. When you've given them the spanking, you've given them the punishment. They have now been punished. You don't need to be mean to them or snarl at them anymore. The punishment's been delved out. If somebody goes and gets 20 to life and gets out after his parole's up or whatever, after he's done his time in prison, he's under no more, or shouldn't be any under any more chastisement from the justice system. His punishment's been paid. So when the punishment's been given, affirm your love to them. This will also show them a picture of God's punishment of sin and his subsequent forgiveness and forgetfulness of sin. God chastens us because he loves us, but he forgives and he forgets. When it's over, it's over. And he forgets more than we do. We can't even forget. I can't forget my own sin. I'm glad that God has, but I can't forget. I wish I could forget about it. Let's look at a couple other methods of disciplining children. Some punishments are more effective than others with different children. It depends on the age of them as well, obviously. With older kids, sometimes taking things or privileges away from them might work. You know, that taking the car away if you even give them one, or taking the phone away, or taking whatever away, that can definitely work. Just stick to your guns on that one, and don't threaten to do it and not do it. You know, that doesn't work. Tailoring punishments with crimes, such as washing out a mouth with soap, or for lying, or for flicking their mouth for talking back, and I already brought up those two issues earlier, but that kind of associates, I just did something, or they steal something and whack them on the hand, or you know, something like that, so they can kind of associate what I did with the punishment. Especially the younger they are, that'll probably make a lot more of an impact to younger kids, because they can associate that pain with the punishment, or pain with the transgression better. But the primary method, as I've said, should be the rod, as the Bible prescribes. I mean, that's what it says, and that should be the primary method. If you start when they're babies and you're consistent, you shouldn't have to worry about coming up with creative ideas for punishment when they're teenagers, because they should be well-behaved and well-mannered kids by that point. So the idea is to start when they're young and do it right when they're young, and then you don't have to come up with all kinds of other ideas, you know, for things, because, you know, by the time they get to be 17 or something, you're probably not going to be giving them spankings and everything. I mean, that'd be kind of, you know, kind of crazy. I guess I'm not saying it would be wrong, but it's just they're pretty much too old for that at that point. You know, probably even quite several years younger than that. They're too old for that. So anyway, start young. The importance of consistency. You must be consistent when it comes to punishing offenses. I mean, that is so important. You can't, if you're waffling and you're all over the place and your kids never know what's going to happen, you know, that the punishment may be severe one day, it may be non-existent the next day, you know, the same thing merits two totally different responses. I mean, you must be consistent, and be consistent across your kids too. Don't pick favorites, or don't spank this one because he's bad all the time. Whenever the good one did something, the same thing as the bad one did and got a spanking for it. I mean, you know, make sure you're not showing favoritism or respect of persons. Don't punish the child something today for something you allowed yesterday, or pass over an offense today for something that you punished them for yesterday. You know, don't. You got to be consistent. Mean what you say and keep your word. Don't say, if you do that again, you're not going to grandma's tomorrow, if you don't mean it. And I've seen this personal experience. You know, threaten your kid with something. Oh, you know, we're all going out to grandma's tomorrow night. You say, if you do that, you're not going to grandma's tomorrow. You know darn well everybody's going to grandma's. You can't leave the kid at home, and they're going to go. So you just lied to them. And now that they realize, once we go to grandma's, boy, it doesn't take very many times of that before they figure out, dad or mom, they don't mean what they say. They're just threatening me, so I'm not even going to worry about it. You know, maybe I'll pretend like I'm sad or something so they think it's working, but they're not going to change their ways. If you make a threat, you must follow through with it. If you don't, the child, like I said, he'll quickly figure out that you're a liar and that you don't mean what you say and that they're not actually going to get the punishment that was threatened. They will figure you out. They're smart, like I said. Don't let your kids get away with something just because you're tired or because you've had such a good day with them that you don't want to ruin it with a spanking. And I know, easier said than done. You're tired after a long day and you're just like, ugh, I don't feel like giving out another spanking. I just don't feel like doing it. And just, I'm just going to let it go this time and I'll deal with it later. You know, I know it's hard. I'm not saying it's not, but if you can, don't let your tiredness or anything else prohibit you from giving out the punishment that you should. You know, just go the extra mile, and the more consistent you are, the less spankings you're going to have to give in the future, the quicker you get things under control. Or because you've had such a good day. I mean, that's got to be a tough one, right? You just had a wonderful day. You spent the whole day at the zoo or something, and you get home, and then they throw a temper tantrum or whatever, and you got to ruin the entire day with a spanking. But, you know, you got to do it. Other considerations. If your child is sick, you might want to take that into consideration of why they're acting up, you know, and you might want to cut them some slack for that. I mean, when kids are, you know how it is when you're sick. When I'm sick, I mean, I'm irritable, I'm tired, I'm just, you know, you're not thinking straight, you're not... You know, you might not be as nice to people as you should. It's no excuse, but magnify that by a whole bunch when you got a little kid who has virtually no self-control and he's sick. You know, so take that into consideration. I mean, I wouldn't give them too much leeway. Don't let them get away with murder when they're sick. But you know, I would lighten the punishment a little bit, given that circumstance sometimes. If they're tired, and especially if it's you're the one that kept them out late and made them tired. You know, once again, you know how kids, I don't need to tell anybody that has kids. Kids get irritable and they get cranky when they're tired. You know, if you're the one that hasn't been giving them their naps, well, don't be beating them for your own stupidity. You know, you make sure they get their naps or whatever. God remembers that we are but flesh and is compassionate toward our weakness, and so ought parents to be towards their children. Look at Psalm 78, 38 through 39. Psalm 78, 38 through 39. It says, He being full of compassion forgave their iniquity and destroyed them not. Yea, many a time turned he his anger away and did not stir up all his wrath, for he remembered that they were but flesh, a wind that passeth away and cometh not again. It's funny. Many a time he turned his anger away. God is plenteous in mercy and compassion, and He doesn't come down with an iron fist on every little thing. So, and you know, don't get me wrong. Maybe I came across way too harsh here. I'm not saying that every little thing, you know, that you got to be beating your kids over every little tiny thing. But things like rebellion, outright disobedience, stuff like that, absolutely. I mean, that needs it. But, you know, some parents, I mean, you know, the kids spill something on the carpet and they get a spanking for it. Well, I mean, that's just kid stuff. You know, kids spill stuff. Kids are... You know, I mean, if he was running and being an idiot or something, you know, that might be something different. But, you know, I don't believe in punishing children just for being kids. Kids are going to be kids, and they're going to do silly things, and they're going to, you know, break things on accident and that kind of stuff. I don't advocate that at all. But rebellion, disobedience, that definitely deserves the rod. Now, lastly, where should children be disciplined? Well, they should primarily be disciplined at home. That's the thing. You see, a lot of these kids, when they're acting up in public at the grocery store, at Walmart, or whatever, they're only acting up there because they act up at home. If they were getting disciplined at home, they wouldn't be acting like that in the grocery store. That's, you know, and parents say, "Oh, I just don't know what happens to them. We just get them out in public and they go crazy. I know what happens to them. You know, don't tell me that. I don't believe that for a second." If they are disciplined at home, then you won't have to worry about being seen in public spanking your children. Because let's face it, I mean, today, you got to be real careful out there. I mean, you spank your kids in public. I don't know what Minnesota's like. I haven't been here long enough to know. There are some states that allow it. You're allowed. I think in Ohio you're allowed. But there are some states where you get in a lot of trouble for that. I mean, you could get them taken away from you. So you probably don't want to be spanking them in public. Or even wait till you get out to the car. I mean, somebody sees you out there in the car, you know, and not a good idea. But if you do it at home, you're not going to have to worry about it, generally, in public. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I mean, case in point, you know, sometimes it happens. I understand, and I'm not, you know, I'm not casting any kind of a snare here at all. Don't let the only beatings you give your kids be in public just because you're embarrassed at how they're acting and you don't want to appear like the parent that doesn't discipline their kids. You know, so you never do anything, and then all of a sudden in public, well, now I'm going to rip into them just to show everybody that... Go again. Just to show everybody that, anyway, that was the second offense for that guy. One more time, and three strikes, and he's out. So my point is, do it at home. Don't let your kids run around screaming all day at home and then expect them to be quiet and still for an hour and a half in church. You know, that people wonder, you know, they come to this church, and kids generally sit here occasionally, you know, if something happens, but kids, they sit here for an hour and a half, and they're quiet. Same thing in Cincinnati. I remember people used to come and visit, and almost without fail, it wouldn't be the doctrine, it wouldn't be anything that surprised them, the fact that we don't use instruments. It would be, I cannot believe all these kids sit here quiet and still for an hour and a half. They just can't believe it, because nowadays, kids just, they can't sit still for 2 seconds. So anyway, you know, discipline them at home. I know you guys do. I mean, I see it. So anyway. And if you need to play church at home during the week, I say play church, you know, sit down and watch a sermon or a video or something like that if you're having trouble with the kids, just to teach them, hey, here, we're going to sit here, we're going to listen to this man speak for an hour, and just teach you to be quiet and all that kind of thing. That can be something that I know I've had friends that have done that, and that can help out too. So anyway, we've covered the why. I'm just going to briefly rehash in case you forgot over the last hour. We covered the why you need to discipline your children, because foolishness is bound in their hearts and they're sinners. That's why, and you also do it for their own good and so that they don't bring you to shame and have you at your wit's end. We covered the what, mainly being rebellion and disobedience. Those two things definitely need to be met with discipline. Covered the when, which should start early, as 6 months old or so, you know, whenever they start to exalt their will against yours. And we covered the how with the rod. And we also covered the where at home. So anyway, I hope this has been beneficial to you. And hopefully it'll be beneficial to some of our brethren that are just starting out with new babies. And they got all this all in front of them. So you get they'll get to get all this information early and hopefully get a good start on it. So anyway, next time we'll get into the education and training aspect of children, now that we know how to give good beatings. So thank you for your quiet and patient attention.